up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up.
Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you been. Pour yourself something cold, baby.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs with you on this Tuesday. The Browns currently wrapping up OTA number 4 out on the practice field. Tomorrow we'll be joined by defensive coordinator Ray Horton, so put that on your calendars. Lots to talk about there. Today, of course, Tuesdays with Gribbs. Sir Andrew Gribble will be with us, and we've got a lot to go ahead and talk about. But before we get into any Browns things, the Cavaliers of Cleveland, Matt Wilhelm. You and I talked about it a lot before the show. Disappointing.
This reminds me of the regular season. They can look great one night, and then half the team disappears another night. And I don't like that. And the most concerning thing, because I believe that shots will fall and shots will be missed, okay? Defensively, we can't stop their two best players. And based on what's happening in the West right now, who knows what's going to happen tonight, two of the teams that we play have two very good players.
Much better than the two from
Toronto. Much better than the two from Toronto. And if we can't stop those two, we're in trouble.
And those other teams also have somebody else that you think can score the basketball. Damari Carroll was trying to shoot them right out of the game, wide open three after wide open. It couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. I hate this team's body language when things aren't going well. I mean, they're the best front runners, but then they look like they hate each other all of a sudden.
Yes.
And it was frustrating. I thought that Ty Lue stuck with that lineup a little too long. He got everything he could possibly hope to get out of them in the fourth quarter, but then stuck with it, I think, a little bit too long. But again, they're the better team, but they just have to come home and win. Vegas is not worried, by the way, for those Cavs fans out there. Las Vegas not worried. Cavs 11-point favorites tomorrow.
Okay.
So hopefully they get it back.
I'm not worried.
I'm not worried either.
I'm not worried. A game at home, I'm not worried.
I am not worried about this series anymore, but 4 days ago, I was sitting there, and maybe I was delusional, and I tend to be getting very optimistic very quickly, but I was thinking 16-0 in
the
playoffs.
Come on. No way.
I was thinking NBA title. Very confident about it. And now that our warts have been exposed, knowing that better competition lies ahead, I am not nearly as optimistic about the titles I was for. In fact, 538, which factors in everything they could possibly factor in, has the Cavs winning the NBA title less than 30% right now.
Wow. And I think what it boils down to, and it's just, I watched a snippet by, ESPN's Brian Windhorst, is the Raptors are tempting the Cleveland Cavaliers to shoot the three, which they do in numbers, and they're not hitting the way they have in past series.
No.
They're not. And LeBron's not getting to the rim the way he did in the first two games. No one's getting to the rim the way that they could in the first two games. The worst thing that could possibly have happened to us is this Biyombo guy, who I still don't like.
You'd love him if he was on
the two thing. The two people that if I could walk up and smack in the face in the world right now is most relevant to me is one would be Biyombo, the second would be Drake.
Biyombo is out Tristan Thompsoning. Tristan Thompson. Where's Tristan Thompson at?
Nowhere.
Where is he?
Nowhere.
Put out an APB for him. Where is he?
Nowhere.
What's going on with him?
Nowhere. Can't score, can't even rebound anymore.
It is a little bit crazy.
It should be embarrassing for a max contract guy to have, in game three, 26 rebounds by your equivalent on the other side of the court.
Tristan Thompson's plus minus, by the way, minus 14 yesterday in that game. Minus 14. For
Biyombo?
Tristan Thompson. Biyombo was plus 9, had 14
Guy
boards.
Can't score, can barely shoot free throws, can barely speak the English language, and plus 9.
He was turned in a very, very solid game. Gibbs, are you worried at all?
I'm a little concerned. I'm not driving to the 480 bridge like half of Twitter was last night.
Oh, God. Twitter last night was hysterical.
Was it?
It was so great, man. I stayed up long past the game.
The crazy thing about it is we took 83 shots from the field. 41 were threes. I know we've had some great three-point shooting performances, but at the end of the day, if you're playing the Cavs and you're going to say, I'm going to turn them into a nothing but a jump shooting team, don't you feel better about your chances than when we're scoring all of our points in the paint
and
getting
the basket. Who's the purest jump shooter on our team?
Probably Kyrie.
No.
Maybe Channing Frye.
JR?
It's either JR or Frye.
Kyrie's a very pure shooter.
Okay, can Tristan shoot?
No.
Can LeBron shoot?
I'm not quite sure what Tristan does right now.
Right.
Other than he's struggling.
Cash
can
a very
Shump
large
shoot?
Paycheck.
He's struggling.
Shump can't shoot. Dellavedova's
Dellavedova has lost his ability to play. I mean, he made some nice passes, the five
assists. Let's not forget, though, he's hurt.
That air ball three was –
The other game three, he got – or game two, he got hurt. He twisted the ankle.
He was the only guy on our bench that had a negative plus minus. Deli was minus three.
The one other frustrating thing along the same lines of turning us into a jump shooting team is, and this is down the stretch, what got me so angry watching that basketball game on the couch was LeBron making a move with aggression towards the hoop, getting airborne, and not finishing at the rim. Not getting to the line, not getting fouled, not emphatically dunking, not doopsie doing it and throwing it up at the hoop while you're getting fouled. And I don't know if there's doubt in his mind about, am I going to get the call or am I not? But this pass-first mentality, I thought last night was a perfect opportunity, especially in the fourth quarter, the way they were running that set up at the free throw line with Dellavedova. We got the LeBron oop. You got two dunks
Richard
by
Jefferson.
Jefferson, a dunk, you know, and a lay-in. That LeBron could have had a 16-point quarter and went for the 36 that it would have needed to win last night's game. But he immediately looks to the perimeter to find a shooter and don't shoot it if you're not running hot.
The interesting thing is that he ended up with six assists, and I thought watching the game when I would go and dig into the box score that he'd have more than that because he passed so much last night.
But nobody's finishing.
And what bothered me was at the end of the game, the fourth quarter, but the end of the game when they switched their defense and they had Lowry guarding LeBron, he would get the ball in the post and you would think it would just be like a whirlwind. Give me the ball. I'm just going to muscle this guy and dunk on him. And instead he would wait and wait and wait for the double team to come and then to pass it out. I mean, to me, it's almost like if you're LeBron and you have Kyle Lowry guarding the post, it's almost like being unguarded, right?
Well, and that was the issue last night. If you take a look at the numbers inside in the paint and whatnot, I mean, they just didn't do anything inside.
But why is he not attacking right there?
Well, and that's my other thing. Biombo had three fouls at halftime. He ended the game with three fouls, which means you didn't do anything inside. You didn't even try to go inside on this guy.
I don't know.
Were getting the calls.
Tell you what, LeBron had the opportunity to posterize Biombo. Biombo had a good block. They called it a foul, but that was a legit block.
That was a good block.
That would have been a great posterize.
I hate that stupid smile, too.
So do I.
He gave them
right
a tumbo. He could give them a tumbo. Kevin Love was sick.
Vicious.
Where's Kevin Love at?
Kevin Love's hurt, too. I think Kevin Love's hurt worse than they're letting on. He stepped on an official's foot last night.
Yeah, and went down in a heap.
Great. Fantastic.
He didn't play in the fourth quarter.
No, second. Well, but at the same time, he's 5 of 23 in the last two games in the fourth quarter. So why not put Channing Frye out there who's making shots?
I mean, for a while there, it seemed like he couldn't miss.
No. They made a great run. They came back. They had a valiant comeback. They ran out of gas.
And we couldn't defend them.
You're right. They couldn't defend them, but that's what happens. You know, that's what the Cavs did to the Raptors. You know, the Raptors were not shooting or playing well at all. They looked tired in the first two games. They've now got their legs underneath them. They're now being coached to play the Cavaliers properly. And I know it was in their building, but they're playing well and they're hitting shots.
Let's not forget, too, Dwayne Casey, who's the head coach of Toronto, was the number one assistant on the Dallas Mavericks bench when the Mavericks beat LeBron and the Heat in LeBron's first year in the NBA Finals.
Could you imagine watching a basketball game with Michael Jordan having the ball at the three-point line and the other team's defender literally going back into the paint and daring him to shoot it?
Nope.
And therein lies your comparison on who the best player in the world is. There's no comparison.
The thing that boggles my mind, though, is I remember, even in Miami, he shot it well. And when he was young LeBron with the Cavs, he would have those games where he'd go bananas from three.
4 of 6.
And the ones where he just started pulling up from like 40 when he was really feeling it and throwing those. I mean,
The heat check.
Confidence is a very powerful thing. LeBron played a great game. I don't want anybody. 46 minutes, 11 of 16 from the floor, 9 boards, 6 assists. A very strong effort. But at the end, I would have if Lowry's guarding him in the post, that should be an automatic. I'm going to go in and get fouled. Or I'm going to draw the double team aggressively so somebody cut in. It was kind of like passively waiting for that double team to come and then kick it out.
I'll take
my shots with LeBron, quite frankly.
Absolutely. And I think there are times where, as a Cavs fan, you love when LeBron penetrates or Kyrie penetrates and you have, every 5 feet or 6 feet around the entire perimeter is a shooter, someone who can bury a three. So it's up to that, penetrator to find that shooter. But what I think when you're not running hot, and I think this is where Ty Lue, it's you need that penetrator to get the guy down on the block. Where's my cut? Give me a cutter. Give me another finisher, which we have. JR can finish. Kyrie can finish. I think
Richard Jefferson can finish.
Give me a cutter, draw some defenders in. It's only going to open those shooters up even wider.
LeBron, ESPN just tweeted this out as if it was prophetic. LeBron in the fourth quarter of game 4, 3-for-4 shooting, same number of shots as Richard Jefferson. He did not make a field goal in the final 5 minutes. He did not attempt a field goal in the final 3, and they were running the offense through him. So in some ways, that's his decision.
Yeah.
I just want to see him go in there and get...
Go be the best player in the world. Go be the best player in the world. That's all we want you to do. Nothing more, nothing less. If you are the king, go be the king. That's all I want.
Yeah.
And don't be facilitator. Go be the king.
Sometimes take that easy too. Sometimes take the easy too, as opposed to kicking for three. All right, that's enough on the Cavs. Unless you have anything else on the Cavs you want to say, Gibbs?
Yeah, I mean, it's just they've put themselves in the position. You win by the three, you die by the three. Welcome to the best of three game series.
And by the way,
and you got kudos, two of them at home.
Kudos to this Raptors team.
Hey, why not play Mozgov at this point?
Something.
Because you're Max contract guy can't get a rebound.
Yeah, and I'll eat a little crow here. I discounted Lowry as an all-star. He impressed me last night, impressed me in game 3. And the guy who I think, if he chooses to leave Toronto, is going to get a hefty, hefty contract, or he may sign that one-year deal like a lot of guys are, is DeMar DeRozan.
He should go to the Spurs. He would give them everything
they need.
He's
like Kawhi Leonard.
He was a creep, but he can create. He'd be another guy that can create for that offense.
I just love his game. He plays with his back to the basket. He can cross you over and pull up in your face. He's from 21 feet in. He's as good as it is.
I know. He has a weird modern NBA game, though. He really doesn't shoot threes that much. He shoots a lot of long twos. He would be great on that team. If you took out Danny Green and put in DeMar DeRozan in that lineup, that's a totally different offensive
team. They want Durant. Go get DeRozan for cheap.
Absolutely. All right, by the way, breaking news out of Cincinnati. This should cheer people in Cleveland up a little bit. Pro Bowl tight end Tyler Eifert will have ankle surgery and miss 3 months. So should be ready for the season, but again, we'll miss much of the offseason for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Banged up. I mean, I know he had a good year last year. Banged up too last year, was he not?
Yeah.
I'd be a little concerned if I were the Cincinnati Bengals. Good for the Browns.
Good for the Browns. We'll take it. All right, coming up on today's show, now we've the Cavs out of the way. It's obviously a pressing thing here in Cleveland. We'll deal with it. We'll talk about a couple things. Number one, the NFL.com predicted the Browns starters for 2016. Thoughts? We'll talk about that. What in the world are the Bills thinking with their new media policy? It's absolutely ridiculous. We'll tell you about that. The latest from the NFL owner meetings as well. And, I mean, in a word, let's just go quickly. Draymond Green, should he have been suspended or not?
Yes.
Good God, yes.
Yes, it's ridiculous. I think my dad, who's the biggest Warriors fan of all, said he even thinks it's completely ridiculous that the NBA has no cojones, as they would say in Spanish, and that he believes if the Warriors had won that game, he would have for sure been suspended.
And I thought, is it Jeff Van Gundy last night that made the greatest point during the Cavaliers basketball game about the suspension?
They were all talking about, yeah.
Is had, I don't know, anybody done that same thing to Steph Curry or to Klay Thompson and kick him? Or if Draymond had been kicked by Adams or whoever at some point going up, they would be suspended for sure.
Was it Mark? Who were the Coors on the call last night? It was Breen.
Mark Jackson.
Breen, Van Gundy, Mark Jackson.
Yeah, Mark Jackson was like, if I'm Dante Jones, I'm wishing I'd kicked that guy in the balls.
Right.
He's like, Dante Jones got suspended. I wish I had kicked him right in the balls.
Hey, at the end of the day, he if J.R. Smith does that, he's gone for two games. He's not even gone for one.
Right.
He's gone for two. They're not even batting an eye. That punishment's levied before the end of the night. And it all comes down to dollars.
And tonight's going to be very interesting because of the comments that have been exchanged between Russ and Draymond over the last 48 hours as well.
I think Draymond's trying to bait Russ into doing something egregious. And really, the guy that they just got to get Draymond to do anything, any technical, and he's suspended for a game. Russ is the greatest.
Sean Imms tweets at the show, "No more Cavs talk, please. Enough. I'm sorry, Sean Imms. What would you like us to talk about
today?" We're going
to
talk. I told you. The Browns starters, predicted starters, the Bills media policy.
What does Sean Imms want us to talk about exactly?
This is the Browns. He loves the Browns.
What about the Browns?
Well, we live in the city of Cleveland.
Bob Holtzman, is he going to join us today?
Yeah, not till 1:45. He had to back it up because of the owners breaking a little bit early.
All right, 1:45, we'll have the latest for you from the NFL owners' meetings in Charlotte, North Carolina. Bob Holtzman will join us there. We've got Sir Andrew Gribble at 2 o'clock. And let's just get your calls and tweets. If you want to call and talk Cavs, we will. If you want to call and talk Browns, we will. If you want to call and talk anything, we will do that. 216-578-0850. CBD, Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, and Jason Gibbs. And some interesting stuff out of Buffalo. The Buffalo Bills PR department.
Yeah, I saw this. You were exchanging texts, and I have no idea what it is. So clue me in.
Okay, so the Buffalo Bills PR department has a strange new media policy that they have that's severely limiting what reporters can report on from OTAs and training camp. Are you ready? Here we go. Here are some of the most eye-raising excerpts from their thing. Reporters are prohibited from reporting, which the Bills note includes radio reports, tweets, podcasts, and blogs, specific plays, strategies, formations, packages, sub-packages, and players practicing with specific units. In other words, it is not okay to say, today, Justin Gilbert ran with the first team, or so-and-so was working with the second team. That is out. Reporters may not relay who is rushing the passer, who has dropped passes, interceptions, a quarterback's completion percentage, touchdowns, or any big plays, trick plays, etc. So you couldn't even say at practice today, Josh McCown went 4 for 6 and threw a touchdown to Hollywood Higgins. Can't do that. Can't say it. Photograph, that part, blah, blah, blah. Injuries, blah, 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 blah. If somebody drops a pass, it cannot be reported. That is true. So I've already retweeted one of the guys. So some guy covering the Bills today.
Mike Rodak
had it. You saw that retweet? So this was his first attempt to circumvent it. The last pass of the day by a quarterback not named Taylor or Jones was intercepted by a player wearing a jersey with the absolute value of negative 50. Now, I will point out that absolute values can only be positive numbers. So he's a little wrong in his cleverness there. But nonetheless, the point was well made.
He also tweeted, a former Bills running back who wore number 34 and might be a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame is watching practice today. And then he tweets out, he was hilarious. A quarterback just threw a pass and the football landed in the hands of an offensive player at today's Bills OTA practice.
A Bills quarterback with a jersey number that is the square root of 25 threw a football that missed its intended target. A quarterback just threw a pass and the football landed in the hands of an offensive player at today's Bills OTA practice.
He even took
landed in the hands of.
He took a picture of them warming up. It says, Bills are on the field for their OTA. Nobody has thrown an interception yet.
I mean, it's amazing, though. Like, could you imagine? Now, the funny thing is that fans are going to be there, and any fan with Twitter can do whatever they want. But the media that covers your team, that's why we're hoping to get Vic Carucci on. I can't imagine the Notorious VIC is happy about that.
I was looking at the Notorious's timeline, and I don't think he was adhering to the rules any way, shape, or form whatsoever.
No, Notorious is going to say, bring it.
Mike Rodak, I'm having trouble confirming whether the Bills are holding OTAs today. Not allowed to talk about it.
It's kind of a wild thing. It really is kind of a...
Just think about it. If you're a fan of the show and you follow Gribble, you follow Nathan, you follow Matt, you follow any of those guys, any of the reporters here in town, and you weren't allowed to get any information whatsoever on who was doing what.
Well, the interesting thing is, I wonder if they're doing it. Now, they were asked about it, and, you know, it didn't end up. Yep. Rex Ryan passed the buck onto their PR guy, which obviously this is the PR guy. But now people are reporting people for violations of the policy on Twitter, which is funny. Like, other reporters are doing it, which I think is pretty funny.
I saw Ed Holm calling out people.
Ed Holm called out Ty Dunn. But so what's interesting about it is, and the only way that I could see it as a justification is, are they attempting to make the Bills' own website? And if they, I don't even know if they have a radio show. I don't believe that they do. The only place where you could get that information, or are they trying to not give out that information whatsoever?
I don't necessarily know what type of true competitive advantage is being put into other teams staying abreast to the type of information that is being reported. I would think, and I mean, on every point that you made, there was one thing that probably that stood out that made sense for them wanting to outlaw. You know, essentially saying, you know, reporting on charting a quarterback's completion percentage. That's not, Josh McCown had a good day today. You know, he hooked up with so-and-so and so-and-so. But
violation.
I understand that, but I'm saying that's what I would think would be good. It's the you know, Josh McCown was, you know, 3 of 9 or what, you know, to just report the bad, which in some cases, you know, I understand they have a justice to
you
do.
You can't report the good.
But it's, I know you can't report the good. You can't, and I understand them wanting to protect formations. They want to protect trick plays and so on and so forth.
But it's not like training camp's not open to the public. It's not like any team that wants to send somebody to your training camp can do it. It's not like you're going to then go play in the preseason. It's not like you're going to play in the regular season. I mean, to me, it just seems a little bit crazy. Ty Dunn actually tweeted, Jordan Mills is lining up with the Bills' first team at right tackle. That's why he got the tweet that said violation on it.
Dollar in the jar.
Joe Biscaglia says, cornerback Corey White caught a pass that was not intended for him during team drills. Amazing. What are they doing?
First of all,
you're just going to piss the media off.
It's OTAs, for God's sakes.
Right.
I mean, that's my whole thing.
It seems, and you are the, aren't you the person who does the quarterback charting for ESPN Cleveland?
I do. I've been mocked by national and local media members alike, but people love it and they read it.
It's interesting. I think it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I just go incomplete, complete. I don't say he ran a, you know, a 15-yard fade and dropped the football or whatever.
Well, I wouldn't mind. Do you factor that in? Drop pass, errant
I do.
Pass,
if
pass.
The guy blatantly drops the ball, sure. You know, I'm happy to say that, you know, but.
The weirdest thing about it, too, is it's not like this isn't like a Bill Belichick team. This is a Rex Ryan team. Rex Ryan talks more about his team than I think maybe any head coach in the league.
Yeah, that's why when they asked him about it, he just said, I have nothing to do with this. Talk to that guy. Pointed over to their head of media relations, who I bet is fantastically getting ripped across the country today by national and
local. Well, Eric Edholm killed him, which is so funny, but you can't report anything. You can't talk about anything. And he says, so he wonders, seriously, what would happen if all the Bills media en masse decided to ignore the rules? Will they all have their credentials stripped? What if they turned in their badges for a day and sat up in the stands? Could they report freely about the goings-on the field? None of it makes sense. The only reason an entity tries to protect the message to this great of a degree is because it's afraid of bad press. If you're afraid of that, it can't be a good sign for the team's chances of ending that embarrassing playoffs-free streak. And he said one more thing. Ryan loves to dribble on and on about his team. This makes the media focus more about him and his words and less about players' actions. That's seldom a good thing. I agree. This seems to be... They had to know that there was going to be a massive
outrage.
Pushback.
Yes,
to this.
For sure.
And I don't. Again, it goes back to, you know, I think the fans care. The fans care when all of a sudden they can't get the information that they want to get, and they see every other team in the league getting information.
Well, have you seen some of the other teams? Like the New York Giants just tweeted out like they were doing a play-by-play of their practice. Like so and so threw a pass to so and so with the first team, and so and so, yeah, an interception, and yeah, they're mocking it.
As well they should. It's ridiculous. It's OTAs. And I understand where Matt's coming from, too. And it's a conversation I've always found very interesting. When they tell us, you know, we're only allowed to shoot the first 20 minutes of practice. You know,
that I get because you don't want to have formations on film.
And I get that right up to the point where at training camp you're telling me to shut off my camera. Actually, at training camp they don't do that. But like Saturday at the rookie mini camp, we were allowed to shoot for like 25, 30 minutes. And they told us, hey, you got to turn things up, which is fine. Except that there's, you know, there's a couple hundred people in the stands watching. And I'm not saying it's the Browns. I'm just saying
it's
always an interesting conversation when you're told to do something. You're like, well, I'm not going to report it, but someone else could be in the stands with a cell phone filming it and putting.
Right, but they don't have the media reach. They don't have the Twitter follow. You know what I mean? And maybe there are certain individuals that do, but if something went up on ESPN Cleveland, that would be easily picked up by national things or be an easy way for other teams to see it. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
The truth is, if a team wants to come and find out what's going on at your training camp, they're going to send somebody who's going to sit in the stands like a fan and write everything down and chart everything and do whatever he can to get them the best information possible.
Trey Wingo just tweets, really not a good day for Bills GM Doug Whaley.
It's not. But this... I have no idea if this is something that he had to do, but it is ridiculous. You know, don't you think that they would have to be somehow incorporated in that the football side would be, you know, just from my, you know, experience with our PR side of things, like that's a very hand-in-hand thing. Like coaches want things done a certain way or the head of football operations want done a certain way. It's not just a PR guy running rogue. So I find this a very fascinating thing, and I'm going to go on record as predicting that this will be rescinded
quickly, because you don't want to take something like this away from what you're actually doing, which is trying to put together and operate as a successful football team.
Right. Yeah. Notorious has to be, I mean, he's got to think this is completely insane. I don't see this lasting at all. So Vic tweeted out nice catches by – he singled out some people at practice who are doing very, very well. And some guy goes, you can't do that anymore. And Vic wrote back, living on the edge, man. Oh, the Notorious.
He doesn't – you think he cares?
No. That's what I'm saying. What are they going to do? What are they going to say? I mean, they can't ban all the reporters. By the way, did you see the other comment? And this is why they're saying Doug Whaley's having a bad day. Did you see what he said about football as a sport?
Yes.
The general manager of the Buffalo Bills?
Humans should not play football.
And I quote, it's a violent game that I personally don't think humans are supposed to play. What?
Yeah.
And that's coming from, I guess, someone asked, what kind of started him down that road was someone asked about Sammy Watkins being injury plagued. And he went into the fact that Sammy Watkins has really only missed 3 football games. He's gotten hurt in some or not started 3 football games for the Buffalo Bills. And then going on to, you know, his off-season surgeries and so on and so forth to get healthy for the football season. And that's what took him down that road.
Absolutely wild. By the way, Browns, after yesterday's release of Brian Hartline, they were down to 89. They filled that spot. They have signed David Richards, wide receiver, undrafted free agent, 6'3", 205-pound rookie out of Arizona. Signed with the Falcons as an undrafted free agent on May 5th. Now comes to the Browns. 48 career games at Arizona, 110 catches, 1,205 yards, and 11 touchdowns.
May 5th was
right after
less than 20 days ago.
Yeah.
So was he released by the Falcons already?
I guess. You can't just sign an undrafted free agent that's on somebody else's team.
Right. That's what I mean. So...
yeah,
I don't.
There's not a lot of information out there about.
No, there's not, and it's questionable in my mind. Not so much about, you know, the release of Brian Hoyer, but I'm sorry, Brian Hartline. Boo, that was bad. Brian Hartline is
both released.
This is true, but okay. As you said, a guy that doesn't show up on Dane Brugler's top 70, 50 wide receivers,
100
wide receivers.
Neither did the guy from Rice.
Neither the guy from Rice or the kid from Arizona. Are we signing them as bodies, or are we signing them as legitimate competitors for this football roster? Because I don't think I would want guys that have an opportunity to make the Cleveland Browns football team.
To be fair, there have been plenty of guys that have come from lesser known backgrounds that have gone on to be successful in the NFL. But I think that they're being brought in here to compete. But I know they wanted to have 12 guys, I think, in that receiver room.
But I think in this case, it's One team already released him knowing that he wasn't good enough.
Which, how do they know that? That's what
their rookie minicamp?
Yeah, maybe it just was that easy. I'm trying to look for his transactions, and it doesn't. He's not listed. The other guy that we signed from Rice was also an undrafted free agent.
Somewhere else. Was it Jacksonville? And released by
Jacksonville? No, that was the kicker.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm trying to look. Hopefully, maybe we'll have something on that. Undrafted free agent transactions. He was signed by Atlanta on May 5th, cut by Atlanta on May 7th. So, I mean, it's not like he – I mean.
So, basically, he was there for the rookie minicamp.
If he even was. Yeah, maybe he was just a tryout guy. Yep. I don't know. I have no idea. All right, we'll take a break. But very interesting stuff going on in Buffalo. I do hope we're able to get – Notorious VIC just texted me. He said, sorry, brother, they got slammed. Can we do another time maybe tomorrow? So, we'll get – yes. Mañana, Notorious. Mañana. So we'll have Vic Carucci tomorrow, Ray Horton tomorrow. It's a big show. Shaping up. Plus, it's
loaded.
Media Day.
Loaded show.
Loaded show. Gibbs, are you going to be out here tomorrow?
I will be out there tomorrow. And I think I got to cover game 5 tomorrow night, too. Long day tomorrow.
Wow. Gibbs.
Marathon.
Marathon, man.
Kind of like the bachelor party Saturday. Marathon.
Not there you go. 216-578-0850. Call us up. We'll talk Browns. We'll go through NFL.com's projected starting lineup for the Browns. See if we agree or disagree. I'm pretty clear on what I think it'll be. Well, I don't know if you are as well, Matt, but we'll see if we're in line with NFL.com, or quite frankly, as I should say, are they in line with us? Find out when we return on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. By the way, the injury requiring surgery for Tyler Eifert lingering from the Pro Bowl. I mean, at some point, do they just got to get rid of the Pro Bowl? You can't play football. I would much rather, as you talked about, I know there's still potential for injury, but I would much rather watch a skills competition.
I agree.
One-on-ones, no pads, like receiver, like Revis against A.J. Green.
And I can't imagine, and maybe I'm completely wrong, how much money is actually being made by the NFL for the Pro Bowl? You know, the attendance is never significant, regardless of where it is. Are 10 million people watching the Pro Bowl?
I don't even know what the ratings are for
that's
the Pro
what
Bowl.
I mean. So are the ratings that great? I understand the reward for the players. To be very honest, if you gave all of them the winning total instead of having them actually play for a higher sum, I'm sure they'd all be happy with that and not playing. Send me to Hawaii and give me $80,000. I'm great.
The Pro Bowl drew an overnight 5.0 rating, likely the lowest ever in 2016.
There you go. That was back in Hawaii, correct?
There was competition from Greece Live on that night. So... Could have been a big reason there. Grease Live. Yeah, I think get rid of it. I would actually be much more into watching a skills competition. Quarterback accuracy, arm strength, like who can throw the football the farthest.
I almost think I know that the Super Bowl location does this, having played in a Super Bowl, but like the NFL experience where you could actually have the players, featured in certain time windows to do certain competitions. You know, maybe it's outside the way we did back in the quarterback challenge. That was all. I loved that as a kid. You know, with the chalk on the end of the footballs and watching those guys throw on the moving targets.
Yeah.
That was great. You know, Larry Allen, I think it's Larry Allen, incline bench pressing 400 pounds, for a rep. I would love that, but I just think there has to be an interaction with fans, because I think otherwise playing the game and having and people pay for admission is,
Yeah, ridiculous.
No, nothing.
There was one that I thought that I remember watching where they had kickers. I believe at the time it was Vinatieri and I want to say Neil Rackers. And they would do kicks where they would be like 40 yards,
but left
of the goal line of the and have to kick it out and cut it so that it came around and went through.
I remember that.
Like, that stuff is cool.
It is cool.
Yeah, I want to see that.
You know what it does? Which I guess the Pro Bowl, because it's a celebrity all-star-ish type of football game, is it humanizes the NFL football players. Now, I know the best of the best are there, but if Allen Robinson you know, were walking down the street in Cleveland, would anyone go, oh, that's Allen Robinson? I know you would. Okay. He raised his hand almost to the ceiling on that one. But my whole point is, Allen Robinson is a Pro Bowl football player. Give him an opportunity to shine at something, show off his skills that you can appreciate Allen Robinson and link him, his face, with the Jacksonville Jaguars and being a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
Instead of a random Nike uniform or Reebok uniform who, you know, with a helmet on his head, running at three-quarter speed, having six catches for 80 yards in a Pro Bowl.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
He did catch a beautiful pass from Teddy Bridgewater that almost blew my mind.
Yeah.
In that
but
Pro Bowl game.
My point is, you can humanize these players.
Absolutely.
By having them on television, but also by selling tickets to this experience and having people come and watch it, because they would.
And if you do the skills challenges, you can have the guys mic'd up so they can be talking smack to each other.
The
and
interaction.
Get like, yeah,
the interaction.
That's what people want to see anyway, 100%. More than anything. What are these guys really like? What's it like to hang out with this guy?
And would you rather pay money for that than to sit in the stands, you know, for a trip to Hawaii?
Yeah, I'd even rather watch an NFL player golf tournament where they're talking smack, or like a skins game.
You want to get inside the helmet.
Yeah, I want
to
hang
out. That's a way to get inside the helmet.
Absolutely. Bring Larry David in. I'm ready to go.
Who?
You know who Larry David is.
I know.
Okay. Do you?
Yes.
Do you want to share?
He created Seinfeld.
Atta baby. Phew.
That's all I know him for.
You don't know Curb Your Enthusiasm? Yes, you know. You do. We've talked about it enough times. All right. Thank goodness. All right, NFL.com. By the way, I'm declaring right now, you've heard it here. What is it, May 24th? I'm out on the Pro Bowl. I'm done with it. And I'd also like to let the record show that other than the occasional Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale, get you some, and also
it's been a while.
The occasional Bud Light Lime, I'm done with beer. I'm out. I'm out. I'm out of the beer game. Done with it. Tequila, in. Vodka, in. Bourbon, in. Scotch, in. Wine, in. Beer out.
But it's a quick conversation, and Gibbs, you can chime in here if you want, but how many cocktails, since you're out with beer, does it take for you to, like, feel nice?
Like, have I been eating, or am I just coming straight? Yeah, like normal?
Yeah.
Probably like three.
Really?
Yeah.
Lightweight.
To, like, feel buzzed?
Yeah.
I'm talking about drinking, like, tequila on the rocks. Three tequilas. I'll certainly feel buzzed.
Okay.
Not like three beers.
No, I know that.
Yeah. And I make a if Katie Sims is listening, by the way, she can call up and tell you about the Zagura pour. When I pour it, my drink and like a drink at a bar are totally different things.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's
I'm not cheating.
That's
anybody.
Why I'm always stumbling out of a club at 4 a.m. Not only because it's 4 a.m, but because I'm buying multiple bottles and I'm pouring myself drinks all night.
Yeah. At a bar, who knows? I'm not. I've never.
My
been
only
accused
point
of
is, if I'm having, again, this weekend is Memorial Day weekend. You're going to be spending time outside.
Sure.
I think we might be putting something together for Sunday.
I got
you know,
the two best summer
but
drinks
it's like,
for you.
But 3 o'clock, you know, the party gets going. You want to have a drink in your hand.
Okay, so
if it goes till 10 o'clock,
I'll still be drinking.
You'll still be drinking, and not going to be a mess.
Correct. Yeah, I don't get a mess.
Okay.
So this is what I'll do. So this is the summer. I'll get my big cup, like a 32-ounce, like. Ms. Slurpee cup, fill it, get a lot of ice on it, and then I go Sunkissed vodka or a John Daly. Fantastic summer drink, by the way. You want to go to them now or take a break? Let's go right now to the Ohio Business Machines hotline, and I'm sure Bob riveted by our discussion of me being out on beer. Bob Holtzman from Charlotte, North Carolina, side of the NFL owners meetings. Bob, thanks for being with us.
You got it, Nathan. You're making me thirsty.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with the little John Daly. That's become one of my go-to summer drinks, especially on the golf course. Plays very well out there. So, Bob, what's going on in Charlotte? I know they're talking about Super Bowls. They're talking about rule changes, especially as it relates to replay. What's the latest you have from there?
Yeah, I mean, most of the morning was rule change conversation. And there were a couple of small changes, no big headlines. I mean, they've approved something that was tested last year during the postseason where – the on-field officials can now communicate with the officiating headquarters in New York during the game when it comes to, you know, basically logistical stuff, clock issues, you know, down and distance, stuff like that. This afternoon is going to be headlined really by the awarding of three Super Bowls,
yep.
53, 54, and 55. Those presentations, I believe, are going on right now. Obviously, we're not allowed in the room, but everybody's expecting Los Angeles to get one of the three. Obviously, it's a couple years down the road. We know this year, this upcoming season, Houston, Next season will be Minneapolis. So these are the three following those.
And is Atlanta, with their new stadium, one that's expected to land one of those three?
Yeah, I would say that Los Angeles for sure. I think Atlanta probably is the second favorite for one of the three games. New Orleans, Miami, and Tampa are the other candidates that are making presentations. So it'll be three of those five, and we should know sometime this afternoon.
All right.
And, Bob, anything else that you imagine to be on the docket for the next couple of days when it comes to the actual game and the rules being changed?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about expanding instant replay. To be honest with you, I don't know what's going to happen because I would have expected that that would have happened by now, and we haven't heard anything about it. I think the big thing is going to be Roger Goodell is holding a news conference after today is over with, probably be 5:30, 6 o'clock Eastern time. And to me, some of the most intriguing topics are things that aren't even being discussed at the owners' meetings, stuff that Roger Goodell certainly will be asked about, the Raiders to Las Vegas, which that's not being discussed here officially. It's not on the agenda. That's something still farther down the road. You know, obviously Tom Brady's appeal yet again and what Roger Goodell has to say about that. Then I know Outside the Lines had a report yesterday about, you know, some of the concussion issues and potentially some people on the head, neck, and spine committee sort of trying to strong-arm the researchers. So there's all kinds of interesting stuff to talk about, but nothing necessarily that involves the owners.
Bob, let's talk for a second just about the media in general. I don't know if down there the word has made its way about what the Buffalo Bills and their new media policy for the reporting on OTAs or training camps. Have you heard about this?
I did, actually. Yeah, that's a hot topic among the media. I would imagine.
I mean, what I can't imagine the reaction is favorable, but I mean, what is the possible logic behind what they're doing?
Well, I obviously can't speak for them. I mean, as you guys know, it's, you know, year by year, it seems like it's become more and more difficult just because there are more rules in place, more teams. I mean, I cover a wide variety of teams, probably see most of them at some point throughout the season. And every year it gets harder because coaches more secretive. You know, if they can shut down the media in some way, they will. I mean, I'll tell you that I've been doing this 15 years now, and when I started in the business, I sound like an old guy now, but when I started in the business, you almost had free reign. You could watch a lot of practices, a lot of places. Now, I mean, just off the top of my head, I can think of a handful of places that don't even let you ever watch practice. So I think that's just the trend. I mean, part of it's probably that, you know, the social media, there's more stuff out there and they want to make sure that they're, you know, being careful. But I can't imagine that that people will think too favorably about the Bills' decision. But if that's their right to do it, I mean, it's really hard to blame them.
And Bob, in your 15 years, is there an instance or do you recall at any opportunity that someone in the media snapped a picture, posted a video of some sort that truly created a competitive advantage that essentially affected the football game played on Sunday in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, Matt, not that I can think of off
right.
the top of my head.
That's
my point. I don't know if you remember any when you were playing, but I mean, I know coaches always get paranoid about that. But what I always tell people is if the Browns are getting ready to play the Steelers and Mike Tomlin is watching me on SportsCenter to get his information, something's wrong.
Yes.
That's just not how it works. And I think I understand people being paranoid, but I really don't think that there's any competitive disadvantage ever.
And how do they expect to enforce this? Are they going to just ban all of the local media from Buffalo, which then would turn them into fans and therefore give them the right once again to report on what's actually happening on the field since it only applies to the media?
It's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I can tell you, I was just thinking of an incident a couple of years ago at training camp. And to be honest with you, I don't even remember what team it was. But it was an open practice for fans. There were, I don't know, 5,000 people there watching the team practice, all of whom had access to iPhones and could, you know, record whatever they wanted to record. And I was there on the sideline reporting for ESPN and we weren't allowed to shoot anything. And I asked the public relations staff, I said, how does this make sense when, you know, you look up in the stands and there are 1,000 people shooting, you know, plays and formations with their iPhone, but we're not allowed to shoot anything. And he said, well, sorry, it's just our policy. So sometimes they just absolutely don't make sense. But if that's what makes coaches and general managers and team owner is happy, that's what they're going to do.
No question. Rinci Incognito just tweeted, not sure if I'm supposed to be tweeting this with our new media policy, but since we started practice, there are cookies in the lunchroom.
That's pretty good.
It's good stuff. What do you think about where the Browns are? We'll turn it into a little Browns talk now, where the Browns are headed this offseason. Clearly, the plan is to get younger, 14 draft picks. They've at the wide receivers position specifically, they've just released Brian Hartline yesterday. Kind of overall stepping back for the offseason with what Sashi, Paul DePodesta, Andrew Berry, Hugh Jackson have done. What do you think about where the Browns are right now getting ready for the season?
Well, two things I'll say. Number one, I'm a huge fan of Hugh Jackson. I've known him for quite a while. I think he did a great job in Oakland. I think people forget that. And he didn't have much to work with. I think he'll do a really good job there. And the other thing I like is that at least it seems like now they finally have a plan. And to me, just speaking as a football fan, I'm okay if you struggle for a year or even a few years, as long as I can buy into what the plan is. And it's nice to see that, you know, it may take a while. And obviously, as you mentioned, the draft picks and getting younger, that's all pretty obvious. But at least it seems like they have a plan. And I'm intrigued to see how, you know, the front office, the Paul DePodesta stuff works out, because that's, you know, potentially to be somewhat game-changing, because there's not a whole lot of NFL teams doing stuff like that.
Absolutely, Bob. And part of that plan, I think, was executed this year is acquiring bodies, and especially wide receivers. Just go take us back, if you've any national narrative that you've come across in regards to the Cleveland Browns' approach to this past year's draft.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that was interesting was the fact that they, at least what I had heard, was that they took some guys, you know, who may be able to sort of mimic some of the guys they have to face in the division on the practice squad. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you go up against Antonio Brown twice a year and A.J. Green twice a year, you know, you've got to be able to prepare for that. And I think they're doing some really smart things. And, I like Mike Pettine. I think that he was in a tough spot. I'm sorry how it sort of played out there in Cleveland, but I think Hugh Jackson's the right guy. And I hope fans are patient enough to give it a couple of years, because I think it's going to take a little bit.
Talk with Bob Holtzman from ESPN, who's in Charlotte for the owners' meetings. And, Bob, I know you said it's not on the table, but what is kind of the sentiment from everybody gathering there with all the power brokers of the NFL about the potential for the Raiders to be in Las Vegas?
Yeah. It's funny, because some of the most powerful owners, like Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones, have already come out and said that that's something that they'd be open to. So I think it's going to be a fairly long process. I mean, there are studies that have to be done. There's funding for a stadium. There's all kinds of issues that need to be sort of sorted out before it even gets to the point of the owners sitting down and having a real conversation about it. But it sounds like there's, you know, at least a willingness to have that conversation. I mean, Roger Goodell last week said something about that they're a little bit more open to it, that people's sort of view of gambling has changed. And obviously you can make the case that, you know, the NFL this year, they're playing games in London and Mexico City, both of which have gambling. So I'm not sure how you necessarily make an argument against Las Vegas because of that. But it's I guess the bottom line is it's going to be a while, but I think it's something that could actually happen.
Certainly would be very, very interesting. Quite the road trip. People would be on lockdown in their team hotels in Las Vegas before those games, for sure. Bob, we appreciate the time. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy your time
down, Bob,
at the owners' meetings there in Charlotte.
No, thank you. Good talking to you guys again.
Good talking to you as well. When we come back, Sir Andrew Gribble will kick off our second hour here on CBD.